Now we move on to the next category of customers, which are joint accounts. Joint accounts can be opened between family members, between friends, between businessmen, between partners, and any other entity for a specific purpose. Again, the mode of operations can be decided by the joint account holders, whether they want to operate the account jointly, or either or survivor, or former or survivor, or later or survivor, whatever type of instructions they want to give to the bank. But before that, the application has to be signed by all the account holders. Clear instructions regarding the operation of account should be obtained in writing, signed by all the joint signatories, so that there is no confusion, there is absolute clarity as to who is going to operate the account, and such clarity is obtained by the consent of all the account holders. This is a very essential aspect of joint account opening. Any joint holder, including the one who is not authorized to operate the account, can stop payment of a check issued on a joint account. Banker can exercise his right of set-off against the credit balance in the account of the joint account holders if they have established their several liability also. Now here, it is very important to understand, any joint account holder, including the one who is not authorized to operate the account, can stop the payment of a check issued on a joint account. The banker has to take a note of such stoppage or stopping instructions. The authority to operate can be revoked by any of the persons giving such authority. It is automatically revoked if any of the joint account holder dies or becomes bankrupt or becomes unsound. The banker must stop the payment in such cases whenever there is a death, whenever there is a bankruptcy, or whenever there is any unsound mind or lunacy happening within the joint account holders. The banker must be given clear instructions regarding the withdrawal of securities and the power of pledging securities. Any alterations should be done by the same person who has signed. You cannot accept the authentication by any other holder for an alteration made by one of the account holder. So the same person has to sign who has made the alterations. The balance in a joint account may be payable to both or all of them or survivors of them as applicable. The second part, the either or any one or more of them or the survivor or the survivors of them, this will be applicable again if the instructions by the joint account holders are given in this manner. In both the cases, if one of the joint account holder dies, what is to be done? The balance has to be paid to the survivor because it's a joint account. Even one of the joint holder is competent to revoke the instructions in writing. We have seen that in the previous slide. Thereafter, the banker will treat the account as one without instructions, and the amount will be payable on discharge of all the joint account holders. So this particular type of customer is very tricky, and banker has to pay special attention to all these circumstances and accordingly has to take a decision. These accounts are not like your individual accounts. What happens in case of death of a joint account holder? In these cases, the representatives of the deceased and the surviving account holders are jointly entitled to claim the balance. So one has to note that the representative of the deceased and the surviving account holder are jointly entitled to claim the balance. If all joint account holders die, then to whom the balance has to be given? In this particular case, the legal representatives of all of them can jointly claim the amount. So evidences of the legal representatives has to be produced to the bank, only then the disposal of the balance in such joint accounts can happen. In case of an either or survivor instruction, what is to be done? In such case, the banker is not bound to repay the amount to the representatives of the deceased, because either or survivor simply means the survivor will be the first person who will come to the picture, but to repay the money only to the survivor. Here the banker don't have to see who the legal heirs are, this and that, because it's simply a joint account with instruction of either or survivor. So the survivor comes to the picture first in case of death of the person, and hence the banker should be aware of this clear instructions issued by the customer while opening his account. Banker should not honor the check drawn by the deceased joint account holder before his death. So any check issued before his death would not be honored by the banker without obtaining instructions from the surviving joint account holders. This is very essential. Hence, whenever the bank receives the intimation of a death, a proper recording of the time and the date has to be made when you give the acknowledgement to the person who is reporting the death, as well as it has to be recorded in the bank's record, which can be on the system or on the ledger. This becomes very essential to take a decision for honoring the checks or not before the death of the account holder. In case of debit balance at the time of death of the joint account holder, the banker must close the account, else the first in, first out, the famous Clayton's rule will be applied, wherein the debit balance will wipe off the first credit and the liability may vanish if the same account continues. Hence, banker always follows a policy of closing the account, opening a new account, so that whatever new transaction happens, happens in the new account, and the debit balance or the liability, if at all, in the deceased account will be accordingly settled based on the assets available with the deceased. This is very essential in case of such joint accounts. There are landmark court cases in such scenarios. The first one is your Nagara Jama versus State Bank of Hyderabad. In this, and the survivor was not entitled to the amount. A lady, being his real wife, was his heir to receive the amount. So the survivor was not considered, the lady being his legal wife with his heir to receive the amount was taken note of. In another case of Krishandas Nagindas Bhate versus Bhagwandas Ranchundas and others, in respect of joint accounts open in a bank, the law seems to be well settled that on death of one, there is a resulting trust in favor of his heirs and the legal representatives, unless there are specified facts and circumstances to show the contract intention. Hence, the first priority will be there is a resulting trust in favor of the heirs and the legal representatives. The second part will come into picture only and only if it is established that there are special facts and circumstances which say otherwise. So this particular case and the Nagara Jama case is very useful for deciding how the balances in the account of the deceased joint account can be settled. Now we will see another case of Padmanathan Bhavani and others versus Givindam Bhargava. In this case, on the death of the depositor, the account or the amount deposited in the joint names payable to either or survivor could not be treated as a gift to the survivor because the depositor continues to be the owner of the amount in question till his death. So it won't be a gift to the survivor. In such cases, without any declaration of trust in favor of the depositor, there is a resulting trust in favor of the depositor in the absence of any contrary intention or unless it can be proved that an actual gift of the amount was intended. It cannot be blindly taken or considered as a gift. That has to be very clear based on this judgment. The court observed that such provisions were designed only to regulate easy operation of accounts and payment of money to the survivor. The provisions did not touch the rights interest among the depositors or even the rights of their inheritance. So this needs to be carefully noted by the bankers while settling the amounts in the account of the deceased account holders. Now we move on to an important facility of nomination. Nomination rules came in 1983, but before that, both the bankers as well as the legal heirs of the deceased account holders had to face lots of hardship for settling the balance in the deceased account holder. Neither the banker was able to identify because all sort of claims used to pour in and a lot of time used to be taken for deciding who was the real legal heir or whom the money should be given of the deceased account holder. The nomination rule changed the total complexion of the settlement of the balance in the deceased account holder. The banker got a clear clarity as to whom the amount should be disposed in case of death of the account holder. Let's look at the Act first. The Banking Laws Amendment Act 1983 has inserted Section 45 ZA to ZF, specifically providing for the facility of nomination by the depositors, even for the safe custody deposits and even for the safe deposit vaults. The depositor or whoever is the vault owner or whoever is the safe deposit receipt person can avail of this facility of nomination because of passage of this Banking Laws Amendment Act 1983. Such facility shall also be available in case of joint accounts. In such cases, all the joint account holders together may nominate in the prescribed manner one person to whom, in the event of death of all the depositors, the amount of the deposit may be returned by the banking company. So even though it's a joint account, if the joint account holders together nominate one person, the banker has no doubts as to whom the amount should go after the death of all the account holders. So this nomination rules has helped a lot for the bankers as well as for the settlement of the balance lying in the deceased account holders. Such nominee shall be entitled to all the rights of the depositors after the death of the account holder. The banking company will be discharged of its liability in respect of deposit by making payment to the nominee. Once the banker makes payment to the nominee, the banker's liability towards the deposit in the deceased account will be discharged. So that is an important benefit, or simplicity for handling such accounts of deceased account holder. Now the next class of the customer is the joint Hindu family. In short, we can call it as HUF. This particular class of customer possesses the ancestral properties and carries on ancestral business. Ownership passes on to the members of a family as per the Hindu law. There are various schools of law. One amongst them is the Mithakshara school of Hindu law, in which every male member of a family acquires an interest in the joint property by birth. So as per the Mithakshara law, Mithakshara school of Hindu law, every male member of a family gets an interest in the joint property by birth. After enforcement of the Hindu Succession Act 1956, the share of the deceased co-partner who was a member of the joint Hindu family is also divisible amongst his wife, daughters, and other female relatives. This specific provision has been made after the enforcement of the Hindu Succession Act 1956. What are the precautions that has to be taken by a banker? The loan documents needs to be executed by all the adult members of the family or with their consent by the head of the family in his capacity as a karta or the manager. The other members are liable to the extent of their share in the ancestral property. But if the adult co-partners themselves contract along with the karta, then they will be personally liable also, because the contractual agreement will not be in the form of the proportion of the property, but it will be a personal liability since he has jointly contracted with the karta. The loan is for the purpose necessary or benefit of the family. So this aspect has to be checked by the banker. If it is a loan taken by an HUF, document signed by the karta in the capacity of a karta or as a manager, the benefit of the loan has to go to the HUF and not for any personal interest. The power to transfer the property is made out of or for the legal necessity, again for the benefit of the estate and not for the personal benefit. This has to be carefully noted by the banker. We have to note a very careful or an important concept that an HUF is not a partnership firm. Hence, the provisions of Indian Partnership Act may not apply to it. It is not subject to Indian Partnership Act. Account should be opened in the name of family business or in the name of the karta. No person other than the family members can be a partner while opening a bank account. Account should be operated by the karta or some authorized member. So karta is the primary authorized person to operate the account. Self-acquired property or personally owned property should not be taken into account while determining the security of the family property. Only the estate of the HUF will be considered for determining the security for a loan and not the personal assets of any of the co-partners. Who is a sole proprietor? When a firm is owned and controlled by a single person, it is known as a sole proprietary firm. When we mean by a single person, means it would not be owned by association of persons. He may be doing some small business, He may be having a small firm, but it is totally owned and controlled by a single person, then that particular firm or entity will be called a sole proprietorship. The owner of such firm may open an account in his own name or in any name other than the proprietor. That is, if his proprietorship firm is identified by, say, ABC Associates, then the firm can open an account in the name of the proprietor or in any other name than the proprietor, which can be his firm's name, that is ABC Associates. This account may also be operated by an agent subject to proper instructions given by the sole proprietor. A partnership firm. The Indian Partnership Act 1932 defines partnership as the relation between persons who have agreed to share the profits of the business. It's a relation between persons who have agreed to share the profits of the business carried on by all or any of them acting for all. So the primary purpose of the relationship between this person is for carrying on a business for a profit. It can be carried on by all or any of them for the benefit of all. The bank should carefully examine the partnership deed, just as we see the trust deed while opening an account for a trust. The entire description of the operation of a partnership firm will be mentioned in a document called the partnership deed. Hence, the banker should carefully examine the partnership deed, which is the charter of the firm, to acquaint himself with the constitution and the business of the firm. Once he understands the partnership deed, he comes to know what is the purpose of the partnership firm, who are the partners who are allowed to operate the account, what types of accounts the partnership firm can open with the bank, etc., etc. Hence, this partnership deed becomes a very important document to understand the operations allowed for this particular entity called the partnership firm. Section 11 of the Companies Act 1956 says a partnership firm consisting of more than 10 persons for the purpose of carrying on banking business and of more than 20 persons for the purpose of carrying on any other business. For the acquisition of gain or profit shall be illegal association unless it is registered under the Companies Act 1956. So registration becomes very important under the Companies Act 1956, otherwise it will be termed as illegal, or is formed in pursuance of some other Indian law, or is a joint Hindu family carrying on such business. So, removing some exceptions, any entities which are going above this limitations needs to be registered under Indian Companies Act. If the number of partners exceeds this limit, the partnership becomes an illegal association of persons which cannot enter into any contract and cannot sue or be sued. So this is the consequence of the partnership firm becoming an illegal association. Hence, what we have to see as a banker is the partnership consisting of more than 10 persons for the purpose of carrying on banking business. So for the banking business, any partnership firm which has more than 10 persons and more than 20 persons for the purpose of carrying on any other business for the acquisition of gain or profit shall be illegal unless it is registered. Hence, registration under the Companies Act 1956 is a must for all such entities. What are the minimum number of partners? the minimum number of partners that has to be there for forming a partnership firm under the Indian Partnership Act must be 2, excluding the minor partner who is not competent to enter into a contract. A minor may be admitted into the partnership with the consent of all partners, but he shall not be liable for the loss or the debts of the firm. So minor can be admitted, but he won't be liable for any loss or debts of the firm. On attaining the majority of the minor partner, a fresh partnership letter has to be duly signed by the minor turned major also, after which he will be liable of the majority. The partners are jointly and severally liable for all the acts done for and on behalf of the firm. Now, how to open an account? A firm's account should always be opened in the name of the firm and not in the name or names of the individual partners. This has to be specifically adhered to by the bankers. You cannot open in the name of open an account in the name of the partners. It has to be opened in the name of the firm. The bank paper should be signed by all the partners. Right of the firm to open a bank account should be confirmed from the partnership deed, as we had said earlier. The partnership deed forms a basic document, and from this, the right of the firm to open a bank account can be seen if it is provided, or from any other available evidence, such as the authority letter signed by all other partners. So the authority letter may also allow the bank to open an account in the name of the partnership firm. What is the partnership letter or the mandate? The banker should take a letter signed by all the partners stating the name and address of the partners, the nature of business undertaken by the firm, the names of the partners who will operate the account on behalf of the firm and will have the authority to draw and accept bills, etc., and to sell and mortgage the property of the firm. The banker should honor the check signed by all the partners or by those partners who are authorized to operate the account. So all these major points needs to be checked from the partnership letter or mandate which is signed by all the partners. Now we need to see the power of revocation by the partners. The power may be withdrawn by any partner by giving a notice to the banker. Banker should stop payment of checks signed by such partner and pay the check signed by all the partners. A partner can also stop the payment of a check issued by any partner on the firm's account. The power to revoke the authority is vested in any partner, including the sleeping partner. This has to be carefully noted. So in some partnership firm, there may be sleeping partner, but they have a right to revoke the authority, and the banker should accept such revocation instructions. One who is not authorized to operate the account can also give the revocation authority. What happens when the check is payable to the firm? If a check is payable to the firm, is endorsed by the partner in his own favor, and is deposited by him to be credited to his personal account, how should the banker deal? The banker should do so only after making an inquiry about it from the other partners and after being satisfied that it is in order Otherwise, it would amount to a conversion. Otherwise, the banker will have to bear the risk of losing protection under the Negotiable Instruments Act 1881. So, banker has to be very careful when he gets a check in the firm's name but endorsed for crediting to the personal account of the firm. Sorry, personal account of the partner. Implied authority of a partner. There are certain clear authorities, whereas there are certain implied authorities. A partner acts as an agent of the firm for the purpose of the business of the firm and binds the firm by his acts and deeds. Section 19(1) of the Indian Partnership Act 1932 says, the act of a partner which is done to carry on in the usual way business of the kind carried on by the firm binds the firm. So, the act of a partner which is done for the sake of business in the usual way will always bind the firm, and this authority of the partner is called the implied authority. So, whatever things done by the partner for the benefit of the firm will amount to an implied authority. Every partner is liable both individually and jointly with other partners for all acts of the firm or the instruments executed, provided these are done in the name of the firm and in connection with the business carried on by the firm. One of the partners can bind the firm for the debts incurred by him on behalf of the firm. It is not necessary that the documents of the firm are signed by all the partners. So, this is to be noted very carefully. One of the partners can bind the firm for the debts incurred by him on behalf of the firm. It is not necessary that the document of the firm needs to be signed by all the partners. Borrowing power of a partner. A partner who is not prohibited from the managing the affairs of the firm possesses the power to borrow money on behalf of the firm for the purpose of carrying on the firm's business. Such a debt will be binding on the firm and all the partners shall be liable to pay the same. Hence, the borrowing power of a partner has to be carefully noted by the banker before giving him any loan for the benefit of the firm.